Welcome to Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I'm Shelley Wrench, along with Dr. Nash Gabriel with the Gabriel Cancer Center. Yesterday, we were in the onboarding process of a new on-site clinic, another on-site clinic for us. And you were asked during the onboarding process, what made you as an oncologist become involved in on-site clinic?
Yeah.
And I thought that it would be interesting for the listeners to kind of know the whole history.
Right. This was it was in somewhere in Stockton, Illinois, right?
Illinois, yeah.
Right, because this company, this cheese company, and they have, and the headquarters is here in Canton, and we have clinic for the, we have clinics on their workplace here, on-site clinic, right?
Right.
And it worked for them so well, both in terms of benefiting patients and access and so on, in addition to actually save money, and they asked us if we would duplicate that work in their little factory in Stockton.
And others, yeah.
And others. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have another one somewhere in those cold states.
Way west.
And actually, this was not the first time because we had another customer who also asked us to, again, based in Canton, but they had expanded and bought factory somewhere in Iowa or somewhere. And they asked us also to open the clinic, which we did. So...
But I want the listeners to, and especially with the name of our program, right? Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I think it's interesting for listeners to understand how the on-site clinics were actually born in our world.
Yes. So I have always been interested in medical economics. At the age of 27, actually, I became a CEO of a hospital in Iraq. And I had my own ideas about what was wrong with the system there, despite my lack of political connections. And then I was lucky, fortunate, to do my graduate education in Scotland, where I was totally exposed to a different healthcare system, which I admired until I came to the U.S., where I admired more. And after I came to the U.S., I've been here for about 35 years, and then about 11 years ago, I thought... It's kind of a duty of a good citizen. I consider myself a good citizen, good American citizen. It's my duty to share my experience and my views in three different healthcare systems so different from each other that I decided to take the time to basically write a book analyzing.
Right. And so how did that book, how is that connected with the on-site clinics that we now have?
So the book was Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine, and the book was read by one of my friends, a golfing buddy, who actually read the book once, and one day he told me the golf course he read the book three times, which surprised me because even you reviewed the book, you read it only four times, right?
Right.
But he was intrigued by my indirect analysis. I was basically making observations with some suggestions on how to solve the healthcare problems in the U.S. But indirectly, I was shifting all the, call it the blame or the responsibility, to the individuals. That's always been my philosophy, is ultimately we, the individuals, have to be responsible. And the conclusion my friend reached was, you're saying that the people who actually write the check, which is the individuals, and in most of the time in the U.S., it is the employer. These people who write the check to pay for healthcare have generally almost zero say in how money is spent, who actually takes care of their patients, because what they do, the employers, they delegate the task, whether they are self-insured, so they have a TPA, who will have their own set of providers, being hospitals, nursing homes, or physicians, and have them, they just tell them, go and do the work. Of course, they also hire consultants who will tell them how to handle these consultants. And usually they have another layer of consultants who actually watch the two layers of consultants
true.
On how they're consulting their work. And actually, that's another area there. I'm not being critical of employers. They, number one, they don't know. Number two, probably they don't have the how and the when and the knowledge to handle those things.
Well, think about it. Their main goal is not typically healthcare. You know, employers are out there, they're manufacturing items. They're, you know, they need somebody to...
Yeah, if you have a factory that makes shoes, probably you have little knowledge in healthcare intricacies.
They are becoming smarter, though. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in healthcare that they have become more astute. They just haven't gotten away from maybe all those maybe redundant layers of consultants.
So when he read the book, and then we talk, we're on the golf course, and he said, this is a good business model. And I said, how is that? So basically, he had experience with having a clinic at the factory, and it was for a self-funded employer, 700-800 employees, mm-hmm. Called IRE. And they basically, the clinic there, the employer pay, call it a capitated rate, where they pay this much per year, and the patients would be seen, and that's when I caught it and start thinking about what are the ailments of the healthcare system again in America, besides the fact that the employers who pay the premium, pay the cost, they don't have much to say. I reached another conclusion, which was that access to care is directly related to the cost, meaning the less access to care, the more expensive medicine is, because when people don't have access, and that access could mean they don't have time to go to the doctor's office, they don't have the money for the copay to the doctor's office, they don't have money to pay for the lab testing, so the lab testing doesn't get done, or they don't have money for the copay for the pharmacy benefit if they have a pharmacy benefit. So it all revolves about, really, access became money. The problem is, when you don't have money, which limits your access, that actually makes the care even more expensive. It's almost oxymoron, but it is.
Right, because it takes longer to actually get health care at all, and by that time, whatever ails them is getting worse along the way.
Yeah, good example take. If you are hypertensive and you are not diligent in taking your blood pressure medications, what will happen to the blood pressure? It goes higher and higher. And what happens when it goes higher and higher? You get heart failure, you get a stroke, you get heart attacks, and you die. And each one of those is very expensive, except death is very cheap. Well, you have to pay for the...
Comparably, yeah.
You have to pay for the funeral home, right?
Well, think of the...
Which are very expensive, by the way.
Exactly. Well, think about the...
That's why cremation is really a good way of dying.
I'm in on that. I'm good with that.
I think about it, too.
Remember, the on-site clinic idea is not new, though. The first on-site clinics actually happened in the 1860s with the railroads and mining companies, because they wanted to make sure that the people who were getting injured didn't have to go away from the site. They wanted
during the gold rush?
Right. So it was the 1860s when they thought their value at that time, the employers wanted the people to stay on the job. So that's when the first on-site clinics started. So it's not a new idea. It's just we do it, it's kind of...
Oh, absolutely.
Morphed over the years.
I'm not claiming that my friend or I reinvented the wheel, no. But
although your ancestors did.
I do. My ancestors did, the Sumerians. But they reinvented the wheel. But in my thought process always, when you come with a new project, make it original. And I think that's what we did. We made original by adding additional services that actually I thought they were very fundamental. So when I looked around at other on-site clinics, it was basically, if you are at the work and you get a little bit sick, it's urgent, you go and see them. I didn't think that was enough. I thought that the on-site clinic has to become the primary care place for the patients.
Right. And think about the first one we took over, which, was your friend's, where he had the first on-site clinic. They only had Chantix in their medication cabinet.
Yes. And there was a reason for that, because it is very complex. And we took on that task. And thank you. There, in Ohio, we have a nice law which allows physicians to dispense medications to their own patients without having a pharmacy.
Well, it's actually called personally furnishing. Because there's no pharmacy.
You called what?
Personally, a medical doctor. Okay.
We have to stay that on the radio so that we are all legal. These days,
you know what? The Board of Pharmacy is going to come after me if I say dispensing. We're not dispensing. We're personally furnishing. But anyhow.
Why are people wasting their time with wording? I mean, yeah, it's all right. It's we give medications to patients at the clinic. How about that?
Yeah.
Is that too complex?
And what we did is we actually took just that shelf of only Chantix. In fact, we totally eliminated Chantix because there's definitely much better medications.
Methods
for tobacco cessation. And we put in the formulary medications that are for acute, the antibiotics, things for infections. But then we have definitely the chronic illness medications, we do.
And again, we looked into that because we did our homework. Studies show that when patients take more than four medications, they actually don't take any medication on the proper way.
Right.
I think there's data from CMS, Medicare, where Medicare recipients who have more than five medications, they 45% of the time they take medication. And you know, actually, honestly, I am honored to be hypertensive, right? And so I take only one pill twice a day, right? And I'm a doctor, supposedly smart guy, and conscientious about health. How often do I miss my pills?
Well, think about it. Our pharmacist, when I got a medication through our pharmacy a couple of weeks ago, I said, so how do I take this? He says, when you remember it. It's like, don't worry about when you take it. Just as long as you remember it, that's when you take it.
That's a very smart comment he made, that the problem is not when you take it with food or before food, after food. The problem is that you forget to take it.
Exactly.
And even my pills, I put them beside my aftershave, beside my toothbrush, and you think that's a piece of cake, right? And sometimes I take PPIs because some patients give me heartburn, so I take the PPIs. But even then, before I leave, oh my gosh, did I take my pill? Did I not? So to be on the safe side, I take extra one because I know it's not going to kill me if I take two blood pressure pills.
Yeah, but
a lot
of people don't understand that. You as a physician know when to take that second pill.
The point is that's only one aspect of compliance with medications. And the biggest aspect is we know from studies, there are well done studies, that the higher the copay that patients pay for drugs, the more likely that the patients will intentionally and consciously cheat. And they cheat by skipping the dose, splitting the pill. I wish people would do that with pain medications, right?
No.
Yeah. They only do that with these. And sometimes, and we know when we observe patients, now we have, of course, very, very good system of electronic medical records. When we give prescription, it's recorded in the electronic medical records, how many pills and when, blah, blah, everything, and who gave it. And now when we look, sometimes a patient will come and say, oh, I'm taking my medication all the time. Okay, last time you refilled was 60 days ago, and you only had 30 pills, so how is that working?
Right.
Caught pants down, right? But we don't want to blame them for that, because a lot of the times, there are some people who just hate medications. That's
right,
a fact.
Right, but basically what you're saying, though, is at the on-site clinics, I don't think we made it clear enough that the medications that are provided, personally furnished at the on-site clinics to the employees are totally free. It's paid for by the employer. And a lot of employees, when I go to kick off our on-site clinics...
Well, Shelley, you remind me when you said free. Remind me of the commercial about the Krugers when it say free range chicken. And when the teacher says, no, it's not free. It is free for the patient.
It is free for the patient.
The employer pay for it.
Yeah, and so when I go to...
And this is the key, Shelley. The key is, why is... I mean, these are employers who actually have a pharmacy benefit plan where patients have a stake in the game. Patients have copay. But the employer said, no, I don't want that. I will pay the whole thing. Explain why.
It's because it's so much cheaper. There's all those middlemen are completely taken out of the picture. Your PBM, your consultant, your insurance company. You take all those people out of the middle, and so that atorvastatin that, you know, is $200 for 90 days at a pharmacy comes out to be $5, $10.
$15, $20, $40.
Right. And so the employer all day long says, forget about their copay. I don't care that they have skin in the game. They're actually going to be more compliant if they come in on a regular basis and we have that medication reconciliation and it's free to the employer or to the employee. The employee will totally pay for that all day long. The other thing, too, is through the on-site clinics, because we're not a true pharmacy, right, we can prescribe to the amount that we think that the patient needs before they need to be reassessed. So say, for example, they're on a new medication, and we know within 2 weeks whether it's going to be effective or not. So we're only going to furnish, give that medication for 2 weeks and say, please come
back. And
that
can be very relevant with expensive drugs.
Exactly.
So if we give somebody like lisinopril, as a 3 month supply will be $4, 1 month supply will be $2, not a big deal. But a new drug that is $3,000 or anti-cancer drug that's $10,000, if we give them 3 months supply, that's $30,000. And if after 2 weeks they have a reaction, that drug cannot be returned.
Right. I mean, it's a prescribed medication.
Supplier. No. Done. Somebody paid for it. And that's somebody.
It goes down the toilet.
Is the employer. And we address that one too. There's so many things that we have been addressing with this. The most, to me, again, the most important part is patients now do not have, they still cheat unintentionally, meaning forget. But the financial aspect of cheating is gone now. Because they get the drug for free supplied by the employer who actually is saving a lot of money. So instead of, as you're describing, if they have a pharmacy benefit and I write prescription for simvastatin to a patient, they go to the pharmacy, about $30. The patient will pay, let's say, 20% or 10%, which will be what, $3-4? The employer is paying the rest, which will be $25. We, through our
purchasing... That's if you think everything is status quo. There's a lot more behind that. That's a whole separate...
A simplistic example for the people to understand it. The employer is saying, I would rather pay the total amount, which is $4, instead of paying the partial amount, which is $24, and the patient pays nothing. To me, that was probably the most remarkable thing. Now, we do buy the drugs in volume, in bulk. That saves some money. But the biggest saving is, as you said, eliminating the middleman.
There's another savings that I didn't know going into this. This is 7 years now. We started discovering through some of our very, very brilliant, astute clients and understanding how much is actually being spent on having the PBM actually do those claims. So there's an additional cost to those medications. So on top of that $25 that the employer would be paying in that situation, they're paying another fee on top of that in order for the PBM to actually do those claims. And there's other layers of fees in there that they can't even tie back to the PBM and the insurance company.
And all this, all we described, was just a small fraction of the benefit of the on-site clinic, which is the pharmacy benefit. As I explained, it helps me a lot as a physician that patients are not non-compliant, that patients are actually compliant, and that the economic aspect, the cost of the drugs, is no longer a factor in compliance. But there's bigger benefits. The fact there is the access to the primary care provider in the factory.
Unlimited.
They love it. And sometimes you wonder, why isn't everybody doing it? That baffles me. Because it's not only to do with show me, like you're from Missouri, it's not like show me that you have the savings. It is, the concept of it makes a lot of sense. It's logic. The application of it is scientific and makes a lot of sense. And those employers that we have, customers, that have done the analysis, they have showed a huge savings. And still, there are a lot of people who need to adopt it.
Right. And another major cost savings with the on-site clinics are the labs. All the lab work, I didn't realize until recently. I kind of knew the cost of having labs done through a hospital-based facility is high. But even our own friend who is a physician had a four-panel test done, and they were charging him $600.
You know, Shelley, I shy away from mentioning these stories. You know why? because I think people think they are good, too good to be true.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that sometimes I don't say because people might think, oh, this is ridiculous. It cannot be. Sad thing, what you mentioned about our friend, the physician, it is true. He paid 300, how much he paid?
600. 600 for four panels that we have a cost for like $25.
Same lab.
Yep, same lab, same lab facility.
And think about this. If that physician, if his group, they had the clinic, he will not need to leave work, go to his primary care doc to have the blood drawn, sent to the lab. He comes back to the office, make another appointment to go to the family doc again to discuss the result. Our system is the clinic is there. The patient leaves the assembly line, still considered working by the employer.
Right.
Leave the assembly line, walk down the hallway, maybe less than par three, right?
Yeah.
Get the blood drawn. He pays zero. Employer is happy to pay the $25 because if that test was done at the hospital or at the a regular doctor or specialist office, that would be exactly $650.
Yeah, hundreds of dollars.
So the employer is carrying all the weight and saving.
Well, think about it. Let's finish that scenario. So he comes in, he has his blood drawn, less than 10 minutes off the line. He still gets paid, goes back on the line. We are to automatically schedule a follow-up visit. And that follow-up visit in the on-site clinic, he's off the line again for maybe 20 minutes. He has to go and
that's it.
I mean, it just makes good sense. And the whole issue and the purpose and the goal hasn't changed since the 1860s with the railroad and the mining companies. It's the value is in keeping the production going, you know, the time to work, right. Time back to work.
It became more relevant now because medicine is becoming more expensive. So in the old days, the railroad days in the 1860s, 70s, even in the 20th century, if you get heart attack, what do? You stay in bed for 3 weeks until you recover. Convalescence. That was it. There was no cardiac cath, no stress test, no echocardiogram, no stent, no pacemaker, nothing. Now, so in those days, heart attack was costly to the life of people. But to the society, the cost of heart attack in those days was a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what it costs now. You talk about a heart attack now, and you're talking about $250,000 potential. If the patient gets CABG, open heart surgery, many of them do. I was talking to a patient who's actually a cardiologist that day, and I asked him, what is the cost of, he does replace valves subcutaneously out of state. I said, what's the cost of those valves, which are made from pigs? $35,000, $40,000 per valve. Stents, I don't know how much cost, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. Point is, care has become very, very, healthcare system become very, very expensive because of the innovation and technology. Nobody wants to deny patients access to those things, but everybody should try their best to minimize the use of those technologies. And how do you do that? In a program like the on-site clinic that improves access, improves compliance, minimize complications of chronic diseases, and so on and so forth.
Well, and think about these days, too. A lot of physicians' offices, they have a multitude of healthcare providers that might be taking care of the same patient. In these small on-site clinics that we do, the one thing that we make sure of is that they have one healthcare provider that they resonate with, that they have a rapport with.
Continuity of care.
It's totally continuity of care.
Continuity of care,
And we're doing the annual wellness program for them, meaning those annual lab tests, a thorough physical. We have them on.
Charlie, I like that word, thorough physical of the annual assessment, because there's people who talk about the wellness program. I'm still trying to.
The ones that aren't done by an on-site clinic is what you're talking about. So you have those fly-by-nights come in. So you have a bunch of phlebotomists coming into your plant, maybe a day or for 2 days in a row. They come around, they stick everyone, draw their blood. They take that blood work to a facility, usually a hospital. They run the tests. Where do the results go? Even if it gets back to the patient.
With the on-site clinics,
what do they do with it?
What we do, every patient, every employee has kind of mandatory annual physical exam. And that annual physical exam is comprehensive. If he's a male, he might require a PSA and rectal exam. A female will require gynecological examination, breast examination, mammogram. Everybody get cholesterol checked. Everyone will get CBC and CMP. That's very important. I think just doing that comprehensively, though, it's not like draw blood and see you, and you and I have discovered with those who do it just, we do what they call the wellness thing. There is a fragmentation of the care. My biggest worry is you do testing and there is no system in those places. System where somebody looks at the results. With our system of the on-site clinic, every single test is looked at by a healthcare professional and acted on.
Right, by the healthcare professional is doing the physical.
Exactly.
So
just this, yeah, this I'm really so proud that we did this, started this 6-7 years ago. Of course, I have a lot of pride in what we do at our cancer center, but this was an on-the-side thing that I really think it made a big difference. And the attestment to that is the fact that the employers are very happy with the results.
And they are happy with the results. And I think it's important, too, that people understand that just because these on-site clinics are within the plant of where you're employed doesn't mean that the employer knows what's going on with you. They get stats as to, okay, how many visits were obtained, you know, throughout the year by how many employees. But there is actually correlation of any of the data, anything that goes on in the clinic stays at the clinic. So the employer has no knowledge of anything that goes on.
Professionally, the employers should not and never does know anything professionally. Legally, they shouldn't. And for me, our friends are the patients, not the employers. Thanks to the employers, they pay for the services.
Yeah, as far as it goes.
But that's also a service to them. They have happy employees, healthy employees, less absenteeism. We forgot to mention this, Shelley. If a patient gets sinusitis, if you have bad sinusitis, you've been through that.
Right.
It can be horrible. So what do? You call the doctor's office. Lucky if you get somebody on the phone after 10, 15 minutes. Lucky if somebody will see you next day. So you go home, you suffer. Next day, you take off again and go to see the doctor, right? Give your prescription. You take it to the pharmacy. How long do you wait in the pharmacy to get the prescription and the money paid and so on? With on-site clinics, you go to work and you say, you know what, I'm sick today. You walk in the clinic, bang, you get the antibiotic delivered to you immediately. And the whole process, calling, being seen, and get the medication, even test it done, 20, 25 minutes. And you go back on the assembly line. If you want to.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the on-site clinics. I'm so glad that you wrote the book, and I'm so glad that you're golfing that day with your buddy and kind of...
See, there's always something good that comes out of golf.
Out of golf, every time.
Always.
Every time.
I think that's the end of this program today, right?
I think so.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley.